Monster Man, bonus episode, April 2023. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a bonus episode, going out to my Patreon backers at all levels as a thank you for your continued support. As you can maybe hear, it's been a rough week on my voice. Things have been busy as exams approach. I've had a lot of tutoring sessions, and I think I was not really taking good enough care, so I'm quite hoarse. But I'm definitely getting better. I had a couple of days there where it was pretty bad. But it's been a busy month with that, and also with getting ready for a return to LARP. Most LARPs happen during the spring and summer, and there's kind of a post-winter, like, getting all your stuff ready and getting back into the swing of things, which is kind of a bad work ratio if, like me, you don't really LARP all that much. I only play one game, and I sometimes volunteer to crew at others, so it's a lot of work, and then it doesn't necessarily reflect into a lot of time on the field, but I enjoy the preparation part of it kind of as its own thing. You know, the sort of crafting side of the hobby is also fun for me, so it's not that bad. Anyway, as is customary, here's a rundown of what I've been reading and watching during the month of April. My book list for April starts with a book I picked up in the charity shop, The Honored, a completely forgettable Warhammer 30K novella. One thing I did like was the way in which the story was set in this kind of unusual environment of this underground colony thingy, and the visualization of the space of that was fun, and the sort of different landscapes that that resulted in. If you watch the animated trailer for the new edition of the Horus Heresy game, you can see one of the things that I actually don't like very much about the way that combat in the 41st millennium, or I guess in this case the 31st millennium, is often portrayed, which is that it's just like a lot of guys standing around blasting at each other, which I feel like is missing some of the fun opportunities that the many and varied different landscapes of this, like, over-the-top gonzo setting could provide. I understand why people's war games tables look like a ruined city, because it's easy to make that terrain, and I understand why they're not that varied, because of course it's not practical to make different terrain for every game you play. But if you're just describing a location in a book, that shouldn't be a constraint. I read the graphic novel Get Jiro, which was written by the late Anthony Bourdain, and had art by Langdon Foss. I thought it was fun, inessential, but it had some neat little bits. I find the celebrity chef culture a little weird. I understand that all this shouting of yes, chef, comes from restaurant kitchens, which are very busy and very noisy, and where being able to, like, communicate clearly, and when you say something to a member of the team, to know that they have heard you, like, that's very important. That actually can be very important to safety. So I understand that when you say something to someone, you say it quickly and loudly, and then they yell back an acknowledgement that they've heard it, because that helps maximize clarity in an environment where communication can be hard. But the extent to which it seems like people who don't work in restaurants buy into this kind of mystique, I think is a little weird. And it felt like this was to some extent satirizing that, this idea that these chefs are kind of like gang bosses. So it was fun. Again, something I found in a charity shop. Speaking of books I got in a charity shop, actually, or maybe this came from that church book sale anyway, was the 1960s sociological study, Adolescent Boys of East London, which was a fascinating study, I thought, of kind of, you know, kind of a bygone age. One of the things that was really interesting was the extent to which the kind of, like, clubs and community centers put on by government sort of youth services really did play an important role in the lives of these young people in not a very affluent area of London. That sort of surprised me, because I always assumed that this was something that nobody really made use of. So that was quite interesting. Because I liked the cover, I read the sort of travelogue memoir thing, American Shaolin, which is about a guy who goes to study martial arts at the Shaolin Monastery, or the Shaolin Wushu Center. This is in the 90s, before that was very common. I mean, I think today it's not rare for foreigners to go and study martial arts in Shaolin for a bit. But at this time, this guy is there. There's, you know, he's not alone by any means, and he's not the first by any means, but it's a pretty small community. So that was fun. I understand why publishers want authors to recreate the details of conversations that happened like a decade or more, in this case, before they wrote the book, and where they obviously won't recall the precise wording, they never sound convincing. I wonder if the fact that this genre of writing has conversations that don't sound convincing kind of provided a little smokescreen for things like Tokyo Vice, where the conversations are very clearly BS, but that's sort of what all conversations sound like in these books. Finally, I read John Scalzi's novel, The Kaiju Preservation Society, which I bought largely based on the title. Again, it's in a charity shop. It was a fun concept. I haven't read very many of his books, but if you asked me what my, like, mental image of the ones I have read is, I would say concept is fun, execution's fine. The sort of world-building aspects of this were much more interesting to me than the characters, whose characterization I felt was limited. Everybody just seems to kind of talk the same, like kind of all wisecracking nerds, which is fine, you know. But I think the charity shop whim purchase category is where these are going to remain for me. Film-wise, let's see, I watched Ready or Not, the horror comedy starring Samara Weaving. Yeah, I enjoyed that. I mean, I don't necessarily have a great deal to say about it. I mean, it's a horror comedy. It's well executed. People kind of have praised it for its satirical content, which to me, I'm not denying that it exists, but it definitely goes after like the low-hanging fruit. You know, it's finally time that somebody took on inherited wealth and the privileged in a horror film. But having said that, it doesn't have to be the most original thing in the world to be enjoyable. Horror is all in the execution, and I thought that this movie was good. Also, hey, Andy McDowell's in this. I watched the historical drama crime Keira Knightley vehicle Boston Strangler, which was on Disney Plus. I enjoyed the evocation of the era more than anything else. I'm not really like a big true crime guy, I guess, and you know, this was on, and I thought sometimes when I am at my kind of low ebb in terms of energy, when I don't really have the sort of full brain power to engage with something, this kind of historical thing is sort of where I turn to. Like a lot of offices from the post-war period. You know, it was good. It was fine. It made me read the Wikipedia page about the Boston Strangler, which apparently it is not even really universally agreed that there was a Boston Strangler, which is the position that the film takes as well. So I thought that was interesting. I guess the thing that everybody's waiting to hear about is that I watched Dungeons and Dragons, Honor Among Thieves. I had some reservations, less to do with the film than to do with, you know, WotC and its corporate shenanigans, but I feel like if I'm going to start not watching films made by companies that have shady business practices, I mean, that's all of them that make films. Hollywood not known for being run by, like, workers' co-ops or whatever. So, I did have that reservation, but I went to see it in the end. It's fine. It's good. You know, in a sense, this is kind of what I want for a D&D film, in that it's just sort of a regular old fantasy adventure movie, but it does have some of the distinctive features of fantasy role-playing, in that the characters do fit a little awkwardly with the world around them. There's definitely a kind of party dynamic. I do think it was telling that the most D&D-y things about it were the monsters, and in particular that some of them had been kind of redone to give them a little bit more visual impact, notably the Displacer Beast. When I say that it was a perfectly fine sort of fantasy adventure film, I don't want that to sound like I'm damning it with faint praise. I think that a perfectly fine fantasy adventure film is a laudable thing to make. You know, sometimes you're not making something groundbreaking, you're just making the best version of the thing that you've been asked to make, and I don't think that's a bad thing. So while I don't think there was anything amazingly revolutionary, I had a good time while I was watching it. I have heard the Paladin character described as the DM's character, in the sense that he's the only person who's playing all this fantasy stuff straight, and I thought that was very funny. I was a little confused as to why Justice Smith thought it was a good idea to approach this part like doing a British accent. He is not, as far as I'm aware, British. Speaking of fantasy adventure movies, I also saw Monster Hunter, the Paul W.S. Anderson movie, which, unlike Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves, is bad. But then I already said Paul W.S. Anderson. I shouldn't say it's bad. I guess, like, if you have liked previous Paul W.S. Anderson films, right? If you liked the Resident Evil movies, then you'll like this one just fine. It's based on a video game by Capcom, and it's got Mila Jovovich in it, which is also how I would describe the majority of his previous motion pictures. It's also got Tony Jaa in it, again, completely wasted. The thing about Tony Jaa is that, like, you remember when Tony Jaa was the next big thing? Everybody was really excited about Tony Jaa. Couldn't maintain that sort of sense of momentum even to the end of the Ong Bak films. I actually don't know that the Ong Bak films are a series in Thailand. Like, I wonder if two and three are clearly related to each other, but I don't think they have anything to do with one. And I wonder if people were just like, well, the Americans are nuts for Ong Bak, let's just call these Ong Bak 2 and 3. He keeps turning up, he's like a minor villain in a Fast and Furious film, stuff like that. I mean, it's whatever. Tony Jaa, I like him, he's charming. In his sort of screen persona, I have no idea what Tony Jaa the real person's like, other than good at Muay Thai. I watched The Killer, O Matador, which is a Brazilian, like, Western. I don't know if the remote and inhospitable landscape that it features is in fact in the west of Brazil. I have no notion. It's about a grizzled assassin on a journey to redemption, or maybe not. I thought it was good. I would say, for me at least, that it had more kind of memorable images and memorable scenes than necessarily being a film that I would sit down and watch from beginning to end again. Speaking of the word that means killing people movies, I also saw The Predator. That is because it came on Disney Plus and is the only Predator movie I have not seen. It's bad. It gets into the mythology. It crowds the story with a bunch of, like, secret agents and scientists. It mistakenly assumes that we are willing to rest all of our hopes on Boyd Holbrook. Nothing against Boyd Holbrook, liked him in Sandman, but I don't think he's the guy for this. He reminds me a little bit, oh, there's a plane going past, you can maybe hear the buzz. Hopefully I've got rid of it, but if you hear a buzzing sound, it's because there's a plane going past. Where was I? Boyd Holbrook. You know, watching this after watching Prey is an interesting, because this is the most recent one, I think, before that. And there are two totally different approaches to the franchise, and I think they demonstrate why one of those approaches is successful and the other one isn't. The thing about the Predator as a villain, the attempt to make it kind of sympathetic, partly, sort of, maybe kind of, in this film, but the thing about the Predator as, let's say, an antagonist, is it's very simple and it's very situational. But yeah, so fewer than 50% of Predator films are good. Speaking of very simple action films, I watched Nobody. Bob Odenkirk does a John Wick. It's fine. I think people were very excited about it when it came out, just because of, like, the comic potential of here's this guy who runs around beating up all the bad people, and it's Bob Odenkirk. I mean, he's good in it. It's fine. It's definitely, like, again, I don't think there's anything wrong with just being, like, it's just an action movie, and then it's over at the end. And Christopher Lloyd's in it? And you sort of think, like, oh, here's a little Christopher Lloyd cameo, but he actually plays quite an important part. And then also, so is the RZA. I'm not, like, super up to date on Robert Diggs's filmography. Obviously, best known for composing music for films. I mean, best known in the world of film. But I do think that at least his presence in a movie indicates that either this is some kind of martial arts epic, or we've got a director willing to make slightly offbeat casting choices. And I respect both those things. Anyway, it's Bob Odenkirk does John Wick, and it's way better than that would suggest. I described something earlier as inconsequential, and maybe it's that. Unless it's to say, hey, Bob Odenkirk can play an action role or a dramatic role. Whereas, you know, I think most people think of him as a comedy slash drama guy. But, you know, it was fine. I enjoyed my time watching it. I watched Seven Kings Must Die, the feature-length conclusion to the TV series The Last Kingdom. Like The Last Kingdom, it's bad. Very bad. I don't know why I kept watching it, but now it is thankfully over. Finally, I watched the horror movie Underwater, which is one of those, like, small cast of characters trapped in a base, and then they have to, like, try and escape, and there's some scary force hunting them kind of movies. It makes absolutely no sense that these guys are in their, like, mining station or whatever, miles under the sea. You know, if there was such a facility, there would be some people on, like, an oil rig kind of situation up top, and everything would be being run by drones or what have you. But whatever, it's fine. Like, it's no dumber than the majority of sci-fi premises. Performances are pretty good. After getting sort of lumped with an unfortunate early role that kind of, you know, she became familiar to people through, I think Kristen Stewart has sort of won back a lot of goodwill from the movie going public. Vincent Cassel is the captain. Jessica Hennick's in it. Anytime I see her, I have to go through this process of going, who is that? Oh, Jessica Hennick. The thing that I really admired about it, I'll say this for it. We start with this kind of like moment of introspection with the Kristen Stewart character. And you think to yourself, okay, I know how this is going to be. We're going to like hang around on the undersea base for a bit, getting to know all the different quirky characters. And then, you know, they're going to start to get picked up one by one or whatever. But no, absolutely not. It starts getting wild significantly less than the 5-minute mark, and it stays pretty wild from then on, including an ending which got everybody pretty excited, although I have my reservations. But I can't really talk about it without spoiling the movie. Gaming wise, what have I been up to? For me, the gaming highlight of the month, which is funny because I didn't do that much gaming, was my visit to Salute. So I went to London on the 22nd of April to Salute, which is the annual war game show put on by the South London Warlords, probably the biggest non-Warhammer miniatures gaming event in the UK. I wouldn't swear to that, but that sounds about right. I certainly can't think of a larger one. There was a lot of great stuff going on, and I'm still not sure that I saw all of it. Went with some friends, had a good time, bought some miniatures, but didn't really go overboard. There was, and I hope that this is bigger next year, because it was a great thing. There was a little kind of miniatures charity shop, which was raising money for pediatric cancer research, I want to say. Good cause, and you know I love rooting through a bargain bin, kind of my thing. And yeah, so I didn't actually get to buy some of the stuff that I wanted, partly because the sort of like regular retailers. So the two things that I typically go for when I'm at Salute in terms of shopping, like I like to walk around and look at all the games, take photographs of them. And then also, because I don't have like a miniatures gaming type store in my local area, the closest one's in Ely, and even then its selection is a little bit limited. A lot of the stuff I buy at Salute is just regular old stuff like brushes and paints and what have you. And those retailers are typically rammed. So I actually had a bunch of things on my sort of paint shopping list that I didn't get because I just didn't feel like brawling my way into one of the bigger gaming retailers. So I guess I'll buy them online, probably from the same places. So I suppose in the end, it doesn't really make a big difference, but it's always nice to go and get stuff. Like I say, I was pretty restrained. I bought a bunch of storage for miniatures. That was kind of my main thing. And I am reorganizing the study, a task which I don't need to be doing right now because I have a lot of projects to be getting on with, but you know, when you get fired up about something, then that's what you get fired up about, I guess. And I have learned now that I really need to just strike when the iron is hot and not attempt to discipline myself too much because I'm just going to fail and also be stressed out about it. My D&D game continues. The one that I play in also continues. In both cases, we've missed some sessions due to illness. It seems to be kind of a sickly season. Like, I'm not feeling great. I've had some players get ill. My RuneQuest game, we had some delays in that respect as well. It's all fine. Just, you know, those are the things of being a grown-up. But I feel like that's why I don't have very much to report. I am feeling not like a sense of burnout, but I am finding it hard to muster a huge amount of enthusiasm for RPGs at the moment. Not for playing them. I feel a perfectly good and happy level of enthusiasm for playing RPGs and for doing Monster Man right now. But in terms of like new games and things like that, I don't know. I'm not feeling it somehow. You'll notice I didn't read anything RPG related this month. That's not 100% true. I just didn't finish anything RPG related this month. This weekend, actually, in fairness, which is technically this month. So but after I've recorded this episode, but before it comes out, I may finish reading Barkeep on the Borderlands, which I'm definitely enjoying. I also started reading RuneQuest because of the game, but, you know, it's a big book, so I haven't finished it yet. And one or two other things that I'm a bit, you know, Planet 28, the miniatures game, you know, started but not finished. So I'm kind of in the middle of about 8 books right now, which is not a good place for me to be, but that's sort of reflecting what things are like. Maybe it's the feeling of pressure relating to, you know, coming out with good updates for The Guide to Grunts is making me not want to read a bunch of people doing the same thing but better. I'm really enjoying the Oops All Specials run on Monster Man at present. I think special episodes are such different challenges, you know, the fact that they're also different from each other makes them really enjoyable to do. And you know, we've got a real good spread of like weird conceptual ones, more obscure monsters, classic mythological monsters, etc., etc. You know, I think we've really got some good stuff coming up, and I'm excited for the shows that we're going to put in the next few weeks. So in that sense, overall, feeling pretty happy about it. But in terms of like the gaming, not industry, but like, I don't know, the gaming discourse or whatever. I cut down my social media involvement, partly, you know, as a result of stuff that I've been discussing in counseling. From a mental health standpoint, it's definitely working out, but it is kind of, it is making me feel a little bit more detached from that aspect of the community. And we'll see. I mean, this is a change that I've recently made, so it's probably going to take a little while to find, like, the right equilibrium or whatever. Doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. All right, that's about all the time to talk about my life and what's going on behind the scenes here that we have for today. I don't know precisely when this is coming out, and therefore I can't tell you what our next episode is going to be, other than that it's going to be a special episode on a topic chosen by you, the listeners. So whatever it turns out being, I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.